You're listening to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. Valentine's Day is just around the corner. That means chocolates, flowers, and of course, red hearts everywhere. But have you ever wondered how those came to be the mainstays of Valentine's Day? Well, Dawn Maeslar has some of those answers. She's a self-titled biologist of love. She has a bachelor's degree in biology, a master's in environmental management, and she's worked as an environmental chemist and health inspector. But for the past few years, she's been exploring what scientists know about love and attraction. She shares what she's learning in public lectures and on her blog, The Science of Love, and she's working on a book on the topic. Dawn Maeslar, welcome to Living Lab.
Hi, thank you, Heather.
Now, let's start with the most obvious. Red is clearly the color of Valentine's Day. We tend to associate that color more broadly with passion, with love, with sexuality. Is there a scientific basis for that association?
Yes, there's been several studies, including one from the University of Rochester. Daniela Nesta, a psychologist, conducted a study where she had pictures of women in like blue or red shirts, and she asked men to judge them on attractiveness. And the men just constantly said the woman in the red shirt was more attractive. But not only that, she also said, all right, if I give you $100, how much are you willing to spend on a date? And what she discovered was that men were more willing to treat the woman in red in a more expensive outing.
So the lady in red effect is real.
Yes, absolutely. But it's not just the lady in red. They did this study using women, and they asked them about men wearing red. And they discovered that women felt that men were more attractive in red, and they were more willing to kiss and possibly become more sexual with men in red.
So do we have any sense of how much of that is innate and how much of that is maybe just kind of cultural, social training to think of red as being associated with these emotions or this attraction?
The belief is that it's more innate because animals associate the color of red with sexual receptivity. So if we see like certain monkeys, the rear ends will become red and inflamed when the female is sexually receptive. And we'll see other patterns like that when there's certain birds that will have like a red chest, and there's lizards that will have a red throat piece that comes out when they are trying to become sexually active.
But red, of course, is also associated with danger. I mean, it's the color of blood. And how do we kind of reconcile associating one color with both danger and with love and attractiveness?
Well, that makes perfect sense because they both are involved in the fight or flight response. Norepinephrine is secreted when we are attracted to someone. That's what causes our heart to beat faster, our pupils to dilate. That's part of the fight or flight response. So they're both systems are kind of operating in tandem. So the same would happen if you were afraid of something. You would have the same physiological response, but you would run away. Now, researchers have called this the fight or flight response, but there's actually more to it. There's fight, flight, feeding, and sex. So you're more likely to be, if you're under stress, you're more likely to become sexual. They did a study where they had men walk along a rickety bridge. And in the middle of the bridge, they had women stop and talk to them. And they did the same study on a very simple bridge that was not scary at all. What they discovered is that they asked them, were you attracted to the woman in the middle of the bridge? And they found out the one on the rickety bridge, the attraction was heightened. So danger heightens our attraction, which kind of makes biological sense because if you're in a stressful situation, nature is going to try to get you to reproduce yourself quickly if your life is possibly going to be shorter.
Hmm. Now, perfume, of course, is a classic Valentine's Day gift, and you have kind of an interesting take on why it might make a good gift.
Well, we only have three synapses that separates our nose from our limbic system, which is emotions and memory. So we understand this probably, you've probably seen people have that have done this. When they went to go to sell a house, they tell you to put cinnamon in the oven. So when people walk in, they have this subconscious sense when they smell the cinnamon, this, oh, this smells like home. It kind of brings up that memory of those warm feelings. Well, the perfume is the same type of thing where if you have a wonderful evening with a gentleman and you spray the perfume on you, the next time you spray it on, it brings those memories forward. And you remember that evening that you had with them. In a way, you're kind of training your brain to associate happiness and good feelings with that person that gave you the perfume.
You know, that's interesting because I had heard that smell is particularly good at evoking memories, but I guess somehow I'd always assumed that perhaps perfume was at some level trying to mimic or enhance the effect of pheromones, those kind of hormones that we broadcast to the world. But you're saying it's more just a matter of the memory.
Well, it does help with enhancing pheromones. If you've ever put perfume on you and it smells great in the bottle, and then you put it on yourself and it doesn't smell good on you, that's because it is either it's probably interfering with your pheromones. We do produce pheromones, which men, it's mostly for females that are producing the pheromones. Males produce them too, but the males are more likely to pick them up for the female because we produce ones that are called copulins during ovulation, which become, when they pick that up, it gets them sexually interested and drawn to us. And then there's also the major histocomplex, the MHCs, which are proteins that are part of our immune system, and women will tend to be attracted to those opposite of hers in a man, which makes sense. If you're going to have children, you want to have an array of immune proteins that give them the best support in their life.
So we can actually subconsciously, I guess, kind of smell someone who that opposites attract idea would actually be an evolutionary advantage.
Yes, they've conducted studies where they had women put on T-shirts for 3 nights in a row, and then they had men sniff those and see which they're more attracted to, and they discovered that the male's testosterone level goes up, which is an indicator of his attractiveness, when he smells T-shirts of women that are near ovulation. They did the same study with males, and they discovered that women were more attracted and felt the smell was more pleasing of males of the opposite immune proteins.
Fascinating. Now, of course, not everybody will be out celebrating Valentine's Day later this week with chocolates and perfume, but you say actually just watching a movie about a good love story could be almost as good. So what's the science there?
Well, we have what are called mirror neurons. And mirror neurons are, if you've ever looked at somebody with a sad face and you felt sad yourself, that's your mirror neurons. We're only a thin layer of skin separating us from another person. So if you watch a movie of somebody that's going through an emotional roller coaster, and then at the end they have this satisfying part where the man sweeps her up off their feet and he walks off and they're in love, you feel that too. And you feel that emotion as falling in love all over again. It's like you get to experience it yourself. And that's one of the reasons why women in particular love those type of movies. Men tend to like more action movies, and because if he's watching an action movie and the person that he's rooting for wins, then, or his team wins in sports, he gets a boost of testosterone, and that makes him feel great.
So you were talking earlier about some of the neurochemistry and the, you know, kind of fight, flight, and you would add love response, the norepinephrine. Do we actually see those neurochemical responses to these movies?
Yes. I mean, I don't have the raw data right now, but I know that there's research studies that show, as your last speaker talked about, when you have an emotional response, depending on what you're looking at. And that's part of her study, was she would put up pictures that caused a response. and that would be elicit an emotional response. And part of the emotional response could be, and usually is, a part of our hormonal response. So if we have a stressful response, we're going to either put out adrenaline or norepinephrine.
So, you know, the TV series Masters of Sex about the pioneering human sexuality researchers, Bill Masters and Virginia Johnson, has become quite a hit. Do you think we could maybe chalk that up to our mirror neurons? Are people getting a little bit of a dose of sexuality from watching this show?
Well, yeah. I mean, sexuality is a little bit different. There's a couple parts of your brain, and our basic part is the sexuality part, and that's the reptilian brain. So if we watch a movie that's sexual, that's going to trigger that response, and we're probably going to trigger some dopamine when it comes to that, which is a little bit different from the initial attraction response, which would be the norepinephrine, and that's part of the fight-or-flight response.
Now, there's been a lot of research that's gone into trying to understand what we consider to be beautiful. And clearly, definitions of beauty vary widely from culture to culture. Not all of this is innate. But you say there are some things that are incredibly simple, like even just coloration, that can change our perception of the very same face and make us think of it as perhaps more feminine, more masculine, more attractive, that maybe actually makeup has some scientific founding to it.
Yes, they discovered that women look more feminine with contrast. So when we look at the way makeup is applied nowadays, we see that there's usually a darker shadow on the lid with a lighter one by the brow. That creates an additional contrast. And then a lot of times we'll use a liner, and a darker line creates that contrast. And then the red on the cheeks, and particularly for younger females, red lipstick and then redder cheeks, that again that harkens back to the sexuality and the receptivity, but also it also creates a contrast too, where they discovered that a more non-contrast, a plainer face, is considered to be more masculine. And the males, or I should say men, men in general they're more sight responsive. So they have 25% more visual neurons than females do. So they're really responding to visual stimulation. So their first response is they're going to look for feminine traits. So the contrast, the coloring, they're also looking for, look for health. So they want the shiny hair. They like the thinner waist and wider hips that indicates she may be able to carry children. That initial response is going to be usually that coloration and that signs of health.
You know, in many cases, what you're talking about are the scientific explanations for things that we already know or do or kind of assume. We've got just a few seconds here, but why do you think it's important to know the biology?
When you know the biology, the reason I started working on this is because a lot of people get tripped up along the way. And if we understand what's happening, we can make better decisions. We don't get caught up in these, for example, that last example I just gave you. So men are more visually stimulated. So if you do an online profile, for example, and you put a lot of sexually provocative pictures of yourself online, but you keep getting responses from men that are basically just looking for sex, and you don't understand why, and you really want a guy for a relationship, by understanding what you're doing, why you're causing that type of response in him, you can make better decisions.
All right, Dawn Mazlar, thank you. That's our show for today. Be sure to find Living Lab Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Tell us how you'll be celebrating Valentine's Day and whether it's got you distracted or ultra-focused this week. Until then, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab on the Point is produced by Heather Goldstone. with assistance from Jenny Junker and Alicia Orsini. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Major support for Living Lab is provided by the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment. Additional support from Michael and Roxanne Zach. Living Lab is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.